You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Amidst the torrential downpours in Vancouver, British Columbia, I'm starting the show with the same intro as last time, Brendan, because it's still been raining pretty hard, and for all those people who are concerned about the West Coast well-being in Canada, and perhaps you've heard, Brendan, we're on the, sixth day now of having to boil our tap water, buddy.
Yummy.
Yeah.
Is your corner grocery/video/pornography store out of bottled water?
All the stores are out of bottled water up until yesterday. My girlfriend and I had to quickly run to one of the local stores. We had to call around and almost everybody was out. Because people have just been hoarding the stuff, right? It's like, it's nuts. So, I mean, you can drink
the water once it's boiled. That's not very hippie of people out there.
That's true. There's been lots of reports of incidents in various stores and whatnot. But, you know, if anyone's concerned and they remember, hey, the guy, that guy who hosts FCF Radio, he lives in Vancouver, and I wonder if he's getting good water. We stocked up again yesterday, so right now
I think the only thing you have to worry about is hippie attacks. If there's a patchouli shortage, or if they think you have water.
Yeah.
What is it they say about the Vancouver hippies? The only thing they won't steal is your job.
Well, yes, we're not as famous for our farm work mentality and work ethic like you from you Saskatchewan natives.
My back is aching from the winter wheat harvest.
Yeah, I'll give you a new pitchfork for your Christmas.
I appreciate that, and I need a lathe as well.
Right,
mine is really dull.
Well, we're gonna be talking to two different guys. In today's show, we live in different parts of the States as well. We've got Tim Sylvia, UFC heavyweight champion, coming on the program. He is coming to us from Iowa, of course. And then we've got Chael Sonnen, who's coming up to Vancouver, actually, for the Bodog Fight Finals, coming up on December 2nd. He'll be joining us from Washington State, I guess, would be, right? Portland, Oregon, sorry. He'll be joining us from Oregon. So Chael Sonnen and Tim Sylvia on the program, Brendan. It's going to be a good show.
Indeed.
Well, without further ado, let's get to it. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Everyone has that line that you just can't cross. No matter how mad we get, we're told to turn the other cheek and communicate our feelings. December 2nd, live on pay-per-view, we'll see some things are worth fighting for. Bodog Fight USA versus Russia. 8 members of Team USA will face members of the legendary mixed martial arts team, the Russian Red Devils. Plus, super fights Gracie versus Waterman, Silva versus Pele, and Alvarez versus Riley. Live on pay-per-view or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight Shorts, Camouflage Board Shorts, Corduroy and Camo Hats, Hooded Sweatshirts, to the classic FCF T-shirts, Full Contact Fighter Clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF Sticker and Banner Shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF Shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter. The undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
This is Spencer the Kingfisher, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is the UFC heavyweight champion of the world, Mr. Tim Sylvia. Tim, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, man.
Good. Thank you for coming on the show.
No problem. Before we even start, I just want to take this opportunity to apologize to a lot of you out there. They think I was flipping off the crowd and stuff, and I wasn't. There was a couple hecklers that were behind my dad that were fooling me and giving me a finger, and those are the two people I decided to flip off. But it's not right to do, but I was pretty irritated at it.
We'll lead into a question I was going to ask you about the booing, and explain that part of it, and we'll get
about
into
what?
About the booing, and I'll ask you that in a second. You explained that part of it already, but I guess my first question for you, Tim, is, you know, in the past you made some comments about how you enjoy, motivates you as a fighter to try to prove the experts wrong, try to prove others wrong in areas of where people say you might have a weakness, etc. And you proved a lot of people wrong this weekend, man. I mean, as far as your game plan, as your game, your ground game went, a lot of people, including myself, thought if Jeff Munson got you on the ground, it might be over. And you proved all of us wrong. You get a sense of gratification out of that, some satisfaction?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, people, like you said, people always thought that my ground game was weak, and it was nice to, you know, go out there and go, you know, 5 rounds with Abu Dhabi champion and be on the ground for a couple of the rounds and have him in a lot of trouble. You know, I had him in quite a few submissions, and he was in trouble a couple times.
So do you kind of feel like the Rodney Dangerfield of the heavyweight division? Like, what else do you have to do? Who else do you have to beat to get the respect that you think you deserve?
I don't know, and I don't care. You know, keep putting them in front of me, I'm going to keep beating them.
Yeah.
You know, it may be a 5-round decision, and it may be a knockout, or maybe if somebody else decides to take me down, I might decide to submit to him. I don't know. But I will keep beating everybody they put in front of me.
Now, was the game plan going in to keep it standing? I'm assuming, I mean, obviously you're going for the sprawls, etc. But, you know, when you got Jeff, when it went to the ground and you had some opportunities, like you mentioned, you went for the submissions, were you at all surprised, Tim, at the fact that you were able to almost get those moves on him? Do you think it was conditioning
really
a factor, or?
I'm confident in my submission skills. I mean, I've been in the military for 7 years. I mean, people for some reason think we don't train on that. I don't know what they think, but I do have a pretty good ground game, so.
Tim, do you think that it's just a general ignorance and people's impressions of certain fighters that they've never seen them on the ground or that they're incompetent? And you even see certain fighters that started off on the ground and then they became known for that and they've developed excellent stand-up games and then all of a sudden people forget that they've ever been on the ground. How do you get the best impression? How do you yourself avoid that and get a sense of a fighter?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I mean, I don't know what to do to get everybody to respect me. I just assume that I just keep going out there and winning, that it's going to come with time, I guess. I don't know.
Now, you mentioned you explained to us who you're giving the finger to, and you're right, there was a little bit of post-fight talk regarding that, and you've already explained that. But, Tim, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the booing. In general, does that bother you as fighters, that the fact that, you know, there's some people out there in the crowd who cannot appreciate the technique, the strategy behind mixed martial arts yet?
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely bugs me. I mean, I'd be lying if I said it didn't. But, you know, I during the press conference, I mentioned that those guys are just, you know, drunken idiots, and they just want to see blood and guts. They don't, you know, the true fans and the people that are knowledgeable about the sport, I would like to think they totally understood the game plan and the danger that Jeff posed on the ground. And, you know, I kept the fight standing up much as I could, and I tried to knock him out. He went to the hospital, and he's in real bad shape right now, so I don't have a scratch on me.
Tim, I kind of got to know you, at least your personality, by listening to some of your earlier interviews with Ryan Bennett. You were actually featured quite a bit on that show, not only because of your personality, but your outlandish game calls and things like that. And now it seems that the popular impression, or the way the UFC is, I don't know if it's the way the UFC is marketing you, but you're not that kind of likable, affable character, but you tend to, I think people maybe perceive you as a little bit less than that, you know, sort of not the Tito Ortiz type of villain character, but somewhere in between. Do you think that's something that you're going to embrace, or do you think that's a misappropriation of your character?
I think it's misappropriation, and I'm not going to embrace that at all. You know, I'm not going to be somebody that they tell me to be. I'm going to be who I am. And, you know, I'm just a Midwest guy now, small country boy from back in Maine who loves to be in the outdoors and enjoys fighting.
Tim, for yourself, when you talked about that, you know, you feel you don't get the respect that you deserve, and you only have 2 losses. You've won 6 fights in a row. You've taken on some of the best that the UFC has to offer. Where do you put yourself in the world rankings? Do you feel that there's a lot of criticism often about the North American heavyweight scene, that there's not enough North American heavyweights comparable to let's say, Pride? Do you think that's a fair criticism, Tim? Do you think there's a lot of high-caliber heavyweights out there that the UFC can draw from?
Oh, I absolutely do agree. They're just going to start putting up the money and getting them.
do you agree with that assessment that the UFC heavyweights are lagging behind the heavyweights from around the rest of the world, including especially the heavyweights in Pride? Or do you disagree with that?
I disagree. I mean, I think the UFC's got two or three great heavyweights, maybe one of them, of course. And I think Pride's got, you know, a half a dozen of them. They do happen to have more. Maybe it's because they're paying more money, that's why, you know.
So do you think the UFC should make it more of a priority to spend some money on and get some more high-caliber heavyweights into the organization?
The UFC is just on the 205 jock. I mean, they're all about Chuck Liddell, and they've been catering to him, you know, ever since he's been champion. Before that, they catered to Randy, and before that, they catered to Tito. So that's the division they like to pump up, and maybe someday, you know, they'll pump the heavyweight division. I don't know.
So if Joe Silva got sick for a week and they called you up and said, you're our matchmaker this week, go out and get us three heavyweights from around the world, who would you like to see come into the UFC?
I'd bring Fedor, Krokop, and Nogueira.
So the top three?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
And you're going to fight them all three. I'd be like, okay.
Well, I know I did a story on Ben Rothwell for the Full Contact Fighter magazine paper, and you know, he kind of echoed some of your sentiments. Where do you figure Ben should be? I mean, he's often regarded as one of the better heavyweights in North America.
I'm sorry, I just had a fan. I'm in Walmart. I had a fan call to me, and I'm sorry. Will you repeat that?
My long-winded end to this question is basically Ben Rothwell. I mean, where do you rank him? He's one of your teammates. Where do you rank him? And obviously,
I think he's one of the top 10 in the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Him and I go toe-to-toe all the time in the room. Our sparring sessions are something people would probably pay to see. So, he's a tough kid. And he's only like 23 or 24 years old, so I definitely see him be a heavyweight champ someday.
Did you see, when you look at the IFL, you know, that's the story I did on Ben. We talked a lot about the IFL heavyweights. Are there any other heavyweights in the IFL that you could see being brought into the UFC if that was possible?
No. No, I don't. I think Ben dominates that division, and he's the best one they got.
So, Tim, what now for you? Is Brandon Vera a done deal as far as you're concerned? Is that the next fight?
I would imagine so. They told me, they said during the press conference, they said during the show the winner fights the title. So, I mean, nothing's signed yet, but I would imagine that's who I'm fighting against.
What are your thoughts? You always mentioned that you would like to have a rematch with Frank Mir. What are your thoughts on that, Tim, the fact that he had the motorbike accident and he's never seemed to be the same?
Well, let's be honest. I mean, you know, actually I'm gonna bust on Frank Mir because he's talking shit about me at the UFC. What's the greatest thing he's ever done? Beat me. Other than that, he had two close fights with Wes Sims. Wes Sims is horrible. Probably one of the worst heavyweights out there. But let's be honest, what has Frank Mir really done besides beat me? Nothing that I know of. I mean, is there anything you guys can think of? I'll take that as a no. So, you know, I mean, yeah, he had a bad motorcycle accident, but, and, you know, it set him back. I don't think he would have lost the fight upon him if he didn't have that motorcycle accident, but, I mean, it did set him back. He just, two champions, you know, come back and rise in a situation like that, and he hasn't arisen like he should have. I mean, yeah, he should have walked in. He didn't. He barely won. And you saw what Brandon Vera did in the first round, so.
Tim, what was it like on Saturday night? I know the guys in Milicic are so close, and they're such a supportive, basically a family more than a fight team. So what is it like, you being victorious on Saturday, and then seeing your teammate in, you know, one of the biggest fights of his life, having the results that he did? What's it like? Were you hanging out together? Yeah, really, were you celebrating?
No, I really didn't get a chance to enjoy my victory just because I was so, you know, upset for Matt and upset that he lost. I mean, it just, that's the way it goes, you know? I mean, Drew McReady's had a great fight. Sherm looked like shit. But, sorry, I don't know if I can say that on the radio. But, you know, it sucks that Matt lost.
Can you give us any insight? If you could make a prediction as being his close friend, I mean, I know you can't speak for the man, but do you have a feeling on whether or not there was so much retirement talk with Matt before this fight? Your gut feeling he's going to be back?
He'll be back. I know he'll be back.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind he'll be back. but he just needs to get hungry again. He was just, he was going out there, and that, what I could have got from that fight is he went out there and he was just having a fun time, like he was acting like he was in the gym, sparring, you know, laughing and joking with George, and he just needs to get that mean, angry, caged animal that you see staring across the ring every time he fights, goes out there and smashes people. I think, you know, the next time he fights George, he'll do that.
Tim, one more question about Matt, and this seems to be common with you guys at Miletic. You know, Matt was the sort of all-American guy, and then in this last year, he's been on the show a couple of times, the reality show. A lot of perceptions about his character have changed, you know, with Matt, people like Matt Serra actually coming out and saying fairly disparaging things about him. Do you think Matt was misportrayed on the show as well, or is Matt kind of always been that edgy guy that people just never got a sense of?
You got some little fag, like, what's his name? I don't even know his name. Who's the idiot from New York that won the Ultimate Fighter?
Matt Serra,
yeah. He has to get on a reality show to get back in the UFC. He's out there disrespecting Rich Franklin and Matt Hughes. It's pathetic. I mean, I would have loved to see Matt fight him because the guy is absolutely horrible. He's disgusting to watch. He's one-dimensional. And he had to get on a reality show. The UFC didn't want him to fight in the UFC until he got on a reality show. So George is going to walk through this guy, and I can't wait for it to happen.
My last question for you, Tim, is just concerning, you know, what's your life like now? You've defended your belt for the second time.
I haven't changed at all, man. I got back, and as soon as I got back, and I got my hunting gear already, and I went out hunting. You know.
No, but I guess what I was gonna ask you is comparable to when you're the champion before, and comparing to being the champion now, because it's two different stages of the mixed martial arts.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know?
I mean, it's like I said, I just got recognized in Walmart. Yeah. Walking around on my phone, you know, it's crazy. Yeah. Everywhere I go, I get recognized. The sport's huge now. But, I mean, definitely owe that thanks to the Ultimate Fighter Series.
Well, what's the story? Why I thought all you high rollers with the big UFC contracts shop at Gucci and and things. Don't they have 3-inch Magnum shotgun shells on Rodeo Drive?
I don't use 3-inch Magnum. I only use 2.75. 3-inch, big, powerful, kills the birds too bad.
So you're not renting out a private helicopter this weekend to take you out hunting?
We don't get that kind of money, dude.
Yeah.
If we did, I wouldn't want it anyway. I just give me my my truck and the Hummer the UFC gave me, and I'm happy.
Yeah.
So Tim, my last question to you is: you must be sick of talking about fighting. If you could go on one dream hunting trip, what would it be?
I actually already have it booked. I'm going to Alaska next October, hunting brown bear, hot stock with a bow.
Oh, wow. That's a long ways from where you live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's all booked, so it's going to happen.
Any of the other Miletic guys going with you?
No.
No.
No. I don't really need to.
Well, Tim, we'll let you get back to your shopping at Walmart as you get ready for that hunting trip. We appreciate you coming on the show. We know you're busy.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. All right, bye.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is Mr. Chael Sonnen. Chael, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks for having me.
Good. Chael, of course, is going to be fighting in the upcoming pay-per-view Bodog Fight Show, December 2nd at the Agrodome and the P&E Complex up here in Vancouver, British Columbia. Team USA taking on the Red Devils, and Chael, my first question for you, what do you know about your opponent, Alexei Olenek, and what's your game plan going to be going in, the game plan that we have all come to know from Chael, take him down, pound him out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why we change now.
I don't know much about him. He's, you know, he's on the Red Devil team from Russia. I know he's tough. If you remember from my amateur wrestling career, the Russians was the toughest country out there. So, I'm certain he's a skilled gentleman.
Yeah.
And Chael, are you still training with Team Quest? Are you still, living in and around there and training with your traditional team?
Yeah, I'm about a half hour away from the gym. I train there every day.
Looking back on the fight that got you to the upcoming pay-per-view fight, a win over Tim Crater, and it was very impressive. TKO, stoppage, took him down. Really, really hard strikes from up top. What did you know? I mean, we had Mike Pat on the show a couple weeks ago and talked to him about the Bulldog fight experience, etc. And did you fighters know a lot about your opposition going in? And what did you know about Crater going in? And as far as you had mentioned in the show that he had a strong, you knew he had a strong jiu-jitsu game, but was the fight, did it unfold in the way you thought?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I put him on his back, and he went for submissions. It wasn't rocket science, but it's hard to know about your opponent. You know, you get asked that question all the time, what do you know about your opponent? And then when you respond, well, I don't know much about him, people think you're playing the tough guy, like, oh, I don't care, I don't study him. And that's not the case. I would love to study these guys, or, you know, from Tim Crater even to this next upcoming opponent, but I don't have any way to do it. If I could get my hands on some video, I would certainly sit and watch it, but unfortunately it's tough in this sport unless you fought, you know, in one of the big two shows. It's hard to see any film on anybody, so I didn't know much about Crater. I just had to go by reputation, you know, that turn and ask somebody and hope maybe they knew. Same thing with the Russian guy. Ask around a little bit, hope maybe somebody's seen him, and then just go off of that. So for Crater, I knew, you know, just by his own admittance, he was a jiu-jitsu guy. He wanted to be on his back and try some submissions. And for this next guy, you know, I'm certain that he trains a little bit of everything too, so.
Well, that kind of was, yeah, what I was somewhat delicately walking around was, it seemed that on the Bulldog, the first round here, that there were some names that were fairly recognizable. I mean, yourself, of course, one of them, fighting in the UFC, Nick Thompson, Mike Pat, who trains with George Gergel, and even Mike, not maybe a lot of people knew a ton about him. So there were some other names that, you know, people weren't as necessarily as familiar with, and I think it's safe to say that Tim Crater was one of those names.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. You know, he trains with Eve Edwards, and he had a pretty good reputation, and Tim's out there a little bit. He fought Joey V, I think, in King of the Cage or something. So there was a way to, you know, 7 degrees of separation. There was ways to get back to him and find somebody that had watched him fight or had been around him. But, yeah, it's tough. It's always tough in this sport to, you know, to find out too much about your opponents.
Yeah.
Chael, can you tell us a little bit more? You're probably the most well-recognized name on the show. Can you go back in time and tell us a little bit about how you were approached to be on the show, what you understood about the show, how they pitched it to you, and what your experience were like, and what your reflections are on the whole filming of the episode are now.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting question. I was with MFC, Mixed Fighting Championships, out of Atlantic City. Miguel was the matchmaker. The contract was all with MFC. And then somehow MFC and Bodog, and to this day I still don't know what their arrangement or agreement is, but those two matched up. Bodog decided to be the sponsor and the lead name. MFC knew the fighting sport and had all the contracts to the athletes. So these two matched up. That's how I got in. And then the most interesting part, when you said how did they present it, they presented it just like a normal fight. I'd done two MFC fights before. You get on a plane, you fly out there, you weigh in the next day, you fight somebody the next day, you fly home. The promoter goes and tries to sell a whole bunch of tickets. That's how this sport works. Well, this was totally the opposite. They fly us out there, like 5 or 6 days early, and they hadn't told us anything. I thought we're, again, you know, weigh in, fight, go home. And the day we get there, they hand us an itinerary. And basically it was, hey, we need you on the buses tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. We're going to this location to film. We're going to this location. And this goes on for like 3 days. And then when the day of the show comes up, they don't try to sell any tickets. It was not a promotion. It was a production. And as a matter of fact, a few fans showed up, and they closed the doors and wouldn't let the fans in. So that's really when I started to get it. Oh, they're not. This isn't a typical fight here. They got something much bigger in store. And there was always rumors going around Costa Rica when we were there of what exactly it was they were doing, but it was never explained, or at least to me, I didn't know. If there was a meeting somewhere about it, I guess I wasn't there. So that's how they presented it. It was pretty neat. They, you know, when it was all done and sit down and watch it on TV, oh, I guess that's what they're up to.
So you didn't know this was going to be a TV show. You didn't know that it was going to be a series. You didn't know it was going to be a culmination of the pay-per-view and the Russian Red Devil, any of that. You never knew any of that.
Never knew not one single part of that other than the TV show part. I thought it was just going to be aired, but there's a lot of shows that go around and do that. You know, the WFA or whatever go film a show, Rumble on the Rock. They film a show and then hope to get it on TV. I thought this was the same deal. They were filming it because, you know, someone had told them they could get on TV, like all these shows. It happens all the time, and you never see them on TV. I thought it was going to be like that. I didn't know the gentleman had already bought the network and now was getting ready to create content. So it was really exciting once you found out, oh, these guys are a little bit ahead of the game.
So did you ever think for a second that, like, you know, this is like reflecting back to Enter the Dragon, where they get these a bunch of tough dudes and fly them out on this island, and a bunch of bikini babes around. There's this rich kook sitting back in the background, and maybe you have to kill each other or something like that.
Oh no, nothing like that. The rich guy you refer to, we never got to see him. I'm not sure where he was at. Pulling the strings from behind the scenes, and then
he wasn't walking around in gold pajamas or anything.
No, and then even the hookers in bikinis, I didn't know. I thought they were just entertainment. I didn't know any of that. Enter the Dragon. I guess when you put it that way, you make a good point. It could be viewed like that, but I was on the plane flying out there. I thought it was just going to be a normal deal. They were going to sell tickets in Costa Rica. I thought it was an interesting market to go to because of their economy, to try to sell tickets to a fight. But, you know, like I said, promoters make weird decisions sometimes. So I didn't know. I was just going to do my part.
Well, we asked Mike Pat, rather, when he was on the show, what his thoughts of the final product were. And I had mentioned that, you know, the background part showing you guys training, et cetera, were really cool and interesting. And then it was somewhat kind of odd to me, I guess, and this is just my humble opinion, and I want to reiterate, I enjoyed the series, and I'm looking forward to the pay-per-view, but the stuff with Biff Naked and Natalie, or Natalia from the MFC, I believe she's the president, that was the Russian matchmaker, that stuff to me was, I couldn't really tell if it was supposed to be tongue-in-cheek, or if it was supposed to be, you know, just legit or not. And what are your thoughts, Chael, looking back on the show and those little kind of skit-like parts to the show? What are your thoughts on it?
Well, that stuff's always interesting, and no show ever stays the same. You know, even the two big ones out there, they change all the time. You throw out a show and you go back and watch it and make some adjustments. So I think, you know, I haven't talked to anybody, but I'm quite confident that, yeah, they'll sit down and watch it and think of editing some stuff or changing some stuff for the future. And I'm not sure what the angle there, you know, was with, say, Biff. I guess you have to have a host, but maybe they thought that music and that market went hand in hand. And perhaps it does. Maybe they know something we don't. But, yeah, it was a little bit different of an angle. Sometimes I didn't know if they were, it was almost like they were slipping in commercials for punk rock, along with throwing the fight. So it was a little bit different, but again, for a first product, it's like any TV show. They always change over time.
Yeah.
So you mean you didn't actually have like a 6-foot tattoo chick stalking you for a few days, checking you out, checking your training, and then pitching a contract to you?
Yeah, we didn't have that. I didn't meet Biff until Costa Rica.
Oh,
nice gal. You know, I called her Elvira. She didn't find that funny, but I think that it is funny, so I'm going to stick with it.
She's from Vancouver, man, so she might have words with you when you're up here fighting in a couple weeks.
Perhaps she will.
Yeah. You made a comment on
this. She'll probably be carrying weed if she's from Vancouver.
Brendan, Chael, I'm up in Vancouver, and Brendan likes to make jokes about the city I live in all the time, so
I understand.
Yeah. You made a comment on the show that, and it kind of shocked me to an extent. You said that you're embarrassed about your record when they're doing, like, the bio stuff on you. And, you know, when you look at your record, you've been against a lot of world-class fighters. Most of your losses, I mean, you lost to Trevor Prangley, Jeremy Horn a few times, Renato Sobral. Why did you say that you're embarrassed about your record? You feel that you should have beaten all those guys? Or maybe explain that a little bit more.
Well, yeah, I mean, a little bit of what you just touched on. I just don't like it. When you get into the sport, you know, you want to be the toughest guy alive, and you know, nobody can beat me, and you've got that attitude, and you find out really quickly, you know, that isn't the case. So it's just always a tough pill to swallow. But yeah, it's, you know, it's embarrassing. I don't accept any of those losses I've had except for one. I object every single loss on my record except for one. One time I got beat up. Yeah, and I just don't like the record. I was, every single one of those matches I lost again, except for one, I was winning the fight and found a way to lose, found a way to get caught in a submission. And it bothers me. It just personally, it bothers me. I have a hard time with it. So, I think that's more what I was talking about. I, you know, over time, you accept every fight that they call you for, and you rack up some losses, and sometimes look back and regret it and go, should have been a little bit more careful in my career.
Were you surprised when the UFC, I mean, you had the win over Prangley and the loss to Sobral. Were you surprised when the UFC called you up and said, you know, do you want to fight Jeremy Hort for a third time? Did that kind of shock you at all? Or
no. I mean, I knew I was going back to the UFC. I had lost to Babalu. Babalu and I are 1-1. I beat Babalu. And so we rematched in the UFC, and he won that fight. And I guess they were happy with the fight. You know, the UFC isn't as cutthroat as everybody makes it sound. You don't have to win to be in the UFC. You just have to be exciting to be in the UFC. And there's even a meeting before you go fight where Dana and Joe get together and tell you that pretty candidly. The Trevor Prangley fight, I think they thought was pretty exciting as well. The Babalu fight, so they signed me to a 3-fight deal right after that. So I knew I would be coming back, but the Horn fight was Evan Tanner's fight.
Right.
You know, it was my former teammate. He had the contract for that. He signed it. You know, he went and did whatever it is Evan does and disappeared. And Joe Silva was left with no opponent. So they, you know, they brought me in at about 20 days notice, and that was fine. I'm just saying that's how that fight came around. So I guess I was surprised that when I got the call, but I knew I was going back to the UFC.
Chael, do you think did you watch the last UFC? Did you watch the UFC on the weekend?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think some of those fights actually reflected what you just said about fighters making a conscious effort to have entertaining fights and maybe standing a little bit more and not being so tentative on standing and throwing at their opponents?
And you know, the throwing part, a lot of times guys get confused and think that means you've got to stand up and throw punches. And it doesn't. Tim Sylvie and Andre Arlovski did it for 25 minutes and 14,000 people booed and millions of people turned their TV off at home. So a lot of times people get confused and think that, I got to stand up and throw punches, and that isn't it either. You need to be active and put on a good fight. I think Nick Diaz is a pretty exciting fighter, and he's constantly wrestling and changing positions. Carol P, what his last name? Again, very, you know, really exciting on the ground, and they mix it up. I'm not saying just go to the ground and hang out. It's a fight. You've got to do it all. But a lot of guys get confused. Oh, I wanted to stand up with him. I wanted to stand up, and you know, that's not what the crowd wants to see. The crowd just wants to be fans. The crowd in America likes to boo. Give them something to be mad about. And the UFC doesn't always understand that. If the crowd's cheering or booing, it's the same thing. If they're sitting there silent is when you have the problem. And about the only promoter out there that gets that is Vince McMahon. You don't care if the crowd boos or cheers. If they're silent, that's when you're getting your contract cut.
Chael, the last time I talked to you, this is probably hundreds of interviews back for you, but the last time I talked to you, you were going to be taking on Adam Ryan at the MSC, I believe. a Canadian fighter from Vancouver. And yeah. you made a comment to me in that interview that kind of stuck out, and I want to hear your opinion whether or not you feel it's changed in the last, I guess that was a couple of years ago now. You talked about the fact that back then, at least in the state of mixed martial arts, there was a lot of guys that you trained with at Team Quest or other guys that you knew that just weren't fighting because the money wasn't there, it wasn't a career, and that some of these guys in the gym could compete easily in the UFC or the top levels of mixed martial arts and beat some of the better fighters or what people perceived as the better fighters. A couple of years now removed and with more money and more hype, sports grown a lot. Do you still feel that that is true, or do you think that nowadays, you know, you've got to be really dedicated to the sport, and maybe some of these part-timer guys have, you know, maybe fallen a little bit behind the people who are champions or the better fighters that are marketed today?
I don't exactly remember that what we were talking about, but I would agree with what you just said. If you can't really do it part-time anymore. But at the same time, fighting is a part-time sport. And what I mean by that is you're only training a couple hours a day. These guys that claim they train 6 hours a day don't. You can't. Your body can only do it for a couple hours a day. So, you know, a lot of people play golf for 2 hours a day, or they go coach a kid's team for 2 hours a day, or they read a newspaper for 2 hours a day. So you can work a full-time job, show up for, you know, train in the evening, maybe do a run in the morning, and boom, you're an MMA fighter. But you can't take days, and you can't train 2 or 3 days a week. You know, you need to be in there 5 days and maybe one workout on the weekend. And, you know, but that, if you can do that, if you can be in the gym 5 days a week, then you are a full-time fighter. It doesn't mean it's something you have to do full-time.
Yeah.
You know, it's part-time work. And any way you look at it, there's a lot of lazy guys in fighting. A lot of guys that are pretty candid about it, and they go, look, I don't want to get a job, so I'd rather get in here. And I always hate that comment. Like, I sit on my couch and I feel embarrassed for him. Like, oh, gosh, he didn't just make himself look lazy to the whole world, did he? Yep, he did. There he goes. He's bragging about it. So I've never wrapped my brain around that concept, but no, you need to be in there training for sure. These guys take the sport real serious, and they're getting very, very good, for sure.
Chael, can you describe who are your core training partners now at Team Quest? Who's around and who's not? And how do you train together now that you have simultaneous fights coming up?
Well, let's see. You know, we've got the IFL now. We've got a team. So I've got all the guys from the Wolfpack. Ryan Schultz I work out with every day. Chris Wilson, Matt Horwich, Aaron Stark, Devin Cole. You know, of course, Matt Lindland's my main training partner. I work out with him every single day. And then before each one of Henderson's fights in Pride, I usually go out to California for a week and train with him a little bit. But those are the main guys as far as name fighters. But you know, we've got a whole room full of really good talent that you probably haven't heard of. And each day there's about 10 or 12 guys in the room for practice, and we get really good workouts. We get, you know, our coach Robert Fallis runs everything, and, you know, as long as he's around, I can work out with about anybody if he's running practice. We get enough in.
Kind of, that leads into my last question for you, Chael, is, you know, you've been a member of Team Quest for quite some time, and you've seen the evolution and growth of mixed martial arts during that time, which has led to some of the Team Quest members moving on. You mentioned Evan Tanner, Randy Couture, Dan Henderson does some training down in California, like you mentioned. What's it been like for the team? Did you guys all sort of expect that day to happen, to come, when some of the bigger name profile guys might not be there? Or has it made a noticeable difference in your training there? Or is it, you know, business as always for Team Quest?
Well, it hasn't made a difference in the training. Personally, it always makes a difference, you know, when you lose somebody like that, especially Randy, that loss was felt. You know, just personally, it was nice to walk in the room and see him every day, visit a little bit, come back the next day, do it all over again. So, you know, it was kind of sad when he left, though certainly understood and supported his decision. Henderson was the same way. Henderson was an implant, though. He's from California to start with. He never liked it out here in Oregon. He complained every day about being in Oregon. So he was no surprise that he left.
has done quite well where he's at now. So, and then Evan Tanner, I don't know if he moved on or just moved. Moved on usually means you moved into a different area, and it often implies something better, and it certainly wasn't the case with Evan. So, but yeah, you know, it's tough. Anytime you lose a teammate, it's tough, but, you know, the term you use, business as usual, yeah, we still got to show up at 3 o'clock every day and you know, get our job done anyway.
Mm-hmm. And is Lieben training with you guys now, or is he back up in Seattle for his upcoming fight?
Lieben is back and forth. He goes to Seattle. I think his plan was to go to Seattle 1 week a month. And that's turned into, you know, he's ended up there a couple days a week, and then he's with us. So I'm not really sure. And then some days he, you know, he doesn't come in with us, and I think he's just claiming he's in Seattle. And I think he's really, you know, he made an interesting comment the other day. He told me, I'm in real estate, and he told me he wanted me to find him a house with either a shed or enough room that he could build one, because he wants to turn it into a workout room. And I said, well, why do you want to work out, you know, when you could just come here? And he said he wants to be able to drink beer while he trains, and Team Quest coach won't let him. And I thought he was kidding, and then I quickly realized he was serious, so we began to look at properties like that. So
that's some sports-specific training.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a little fun story for the fans, Chris Lee.
Well, TL, we appreciate you coming on the show. I know you're busy, as you mentioned. You probably got to get back to work here. So appreciate you coming on the show, and best of luck on December 2nd.
I appreciate it very much. Thanks, guys.
Everyone has that line that you just can't cross. No matter how mad we get, we're told to turn the other cheek and communicate our feelings. December 2nd, live on pay-per-view, we'll see some things are worth fighting for. Bodog Fight USA versus Russia. 8 members of Team USA will face members of the legendary mixed martial arts team, the Russian Red Devils. Plus, super fights Gracie versus Waterman, Silva versus Pele, and Alvarez versus Riley. Live on pay-per-view or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
The debate.
This guy does not have time to sit down like you're doing, watch the replay, think about it. You know, it's not like he can sit back and, you know, Monday quarterback it or whatever the hell, I'm sure Monday whatever you call it.
The discussion.
Well, for us, with Brendan and I both being Canadians, we care to say Hockey Night in Canada, yet when we're talking about analysis, a little different than Monday Night Football. We're not too familiar.
There you go. whatever you damn conduct. Cold weather, man. You got it tough. But don't worry. Global warming, you guys are going to be the place to be in like 10 more years. It's going to be so hot here in Vegas, I'm going to have to move to Canada.
Full Contact Fighter Radio. More bang for your loonie than a six-pack for a toonie.
And if you've never been to Canada before, loonies and toonies are what Canadians refer to their $1 and $2 coins as. It's a long, long story. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Brendan, some fascinating comments, really, and somewhat comedic comments, but fascinating nonetheless from Tim Sylvia. Some pretty outspoken quotes by the big man, by the UFC heavyweight champion.
Yeah, he sounds like he's had enough with it all.
Well,
he needs to get away and, I don't know, hunt and kill.
Take his anger out on some animals.
Exactly.
I do have to admit that, although that fight, we're talking about the fight against Jeff Munson, it wasn't the most entertaining fight, but I mean, I was certainly intrigued and interested. I mean, certainly there were some slow moments to it, but the strategy behind it, and I was very impressed with Tim's performance. He certainly proved me wrong. And, you know, it did piss me off, people booing to that extent. And then for people to have the gall to continue booing while he's being announced as the winner and being interviewed, I'm sorry, even if you didn't think it was the most entertaining fight, I mean, the guy deserves some respect for defending his title, for proving, you know, a lot of people wrong in regards to Jeff Munson and what he'd be able to do on the ground. So, I mean, I understand his frustration with people booing.
No, you know, love him or hate him, I think you do have to, you do have to afford him some respect. And, you know, it's what he does and the way he trains says something about himself. He's a big guy. He's like 270 pounds probably when he fights. He can fight 5 rounds without getting gas, you know, and I think he's just got a phenomenal
He's got a phenomenal work ethic, and people rag on him for not being athletic. And, you know, I don't know what that means. If you can roll with guys who are world-class, then you're athletic. If you can box with guys who are world-class, then you're athletic. So he wins, right? And his wins weren't necessarily pretty, but he does what he's got to do to win. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it was remarkable. I've never heard anyone cheer so loud after a mere takedown when Munson took Sylvia down during that fight.
Yeah, I was a little surprised too, but I guess, you know, Jeff Munson resides on the West Coast now, and there certainly was a large pro Jeff Munson contingent there. But on the flip side of the coin, Brendan, what were your thoughts about Jeff's performance? Was he in the condition that you thought he would be in? Was his game plan what you thought it would be? Did he execute properly what you think he should have done?
I thought his shots were, I don't want to say they were telegraphed, but they certainly weren't set up by boxing. And I think maybe he tried a couple of those first shots. A couple of his first shots looked really telegraphed. And, Sylvia saw him coming from a mile away, and they were stuffed really nicely and cleanly. And, after a couple of rounds where I think Munson probably realized that his boxing wasn't setting up his shots, I don't know why he didn't, you know, just try to bull rush Sylvia into a clinch or into the corner and take him down that way. I just don't understand that. But you know, to be quite honest, my assessment of the whole fight was probably around somewhere in the third round. Munson gave up. I think he was, if anything, I don't think he was tired. I think he was, after the first go around on the ground and then the second go around on the ground, I think he was really disheartened. I think he just gave up on the fight.
Well, I think he looked pretty tired too, though. I mean, when he finally got the fight to the ground, he certainly, his punches had no snap on them. He certainly looked like he was trying to rest a little bit. I know what you're saying about trying to rush in, but when you're going in against like a big guy with Sylvia with such a huge reach, rushing in like that makes it a little bit more complicated. I mean, if you look at even the classic fights between Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell, where there was no real height discrepancy or reach, you still have to set up those charges with some kind of strikes. You can't just simply bull rush a good striker is what I'm trying to say. And I think, you know, we've talked about this before on the show, and I think this really shows to an extent the advantages of having that Greco-Roman background versus something like freestyle wrestling. Clearly, there's fighters out there like a Diego Sanchez who's had a successful career based upon it. But if you've noticed in some of his last few fights, he's had some more difficulties with that. Tito Ortiz, similarly. And I think there's something that can be really said for those fighters, like a Matt Lindland or a Randy Couture, although, you know, his last couple fights against Chuck in particular, he had no success in that respect. But certainly I think something can be said for that Greco-Roman sort of approach where you take the fighter down from the clinch.
Well, I don't think it's any great surprise that, you know, a lot of the best MMA people who are considered to be wrestlers, MMA wrestlers, are Greco-Roman guys. Mm. You know, all the guys from Team Quest are all Greco-Roman guys. You know, the judo guys as well. I think one of the most difficult things to defend. You can defend freestyle, you know, you can learn how to defend freestyle shots with a sprawl fairly effectively, but the grapple, you know, the clinch is far, far more complicated to defend. So if you've got a guy who's good in the clinch and is ready to take you down any number of different ways except for a single leg or a double leg takedown, I think it's far more a complicated position to defend. So I think that's why you see those types of fighters having a lot more success. And, you know, the Greco guys are obviously one example. The judo guys are another example. You know, and I think it's tough because you can't simply learn to do one or two things well and defend that from the clinch.
Mm-hmm. Well, I went with Tim Sylvia the last time against Arlovski in the third fight of the rubber match. I went with Sylvia, and you went with Arlovski. I was right, but we were both wrong on this one. And as far as we both picked Jeff Munson to win, we both said that we thought that all, you know, Munson would have to get him to the ground once or twice and he'd win the fight that way. So we were both wrong on that. If you look at our other picks that we went through, Brandon Vera and Frank Mir, we both picked that one correctly. I don't remember if we both said it would be a first round TKO, but I believe we both picked the TKO. And, you know, we asked Tim a little bit about Frank Mir in that interview. But what were your thoughts on that fight, Brendan? I mean, was it was kind of, you know, sad to watch it, to an extent with myself, for myself, a former champion, and man, he, you know, he just got really hammered quickly.
Well, again, I don't know. I don't really understand. You know, obviously Vera's got fantastic stand up. If you don't have fantastic stand up, then why are you standing with him? You know, why are you standing with him and not waiting? You're not working that to some immediate advantage. And that was a criticism of a lot of fighters in this last UFC. Matt Hughes especially. You know, what are you trying to prove? What are you trying to prove standing with someone who's better than you? Is it, you know, Mir, I don't know if Mir was going to win that fight. He actually looked a lot better. He certainly didn't look as bad as he did physically in the last two. But I don't know. I don't know if he's, I don't know if he's got it in him. And, it was pretty, even the stand up that he was working was pretty, I guess, pretty ostentatious, you know, throwing straight rights down the middle and stuff like that. So that's kind of, just the setup of what he was trying to do looked to me to be kind of bush league. And I'm not a boxing expert, but I know that, yeah, it's certainly considered to be a sign of disrespect if you're fighting, if you're fighting a legitimate stand-up guy to, you know, to lead with a straight right.
Well, I just think that, again, you know, we've kind of come full circle here, but it comes down to the wrestling. And, you know, when Scott Smith was on the program, I asked him that question about, was he surprised that Pete Sell, who's more known for his ground game than his stand-up game, whereas Scott Smith is really well known for his stand-up game. And Scott said, you know, it's simple. We trained together, and he could never get me down. You know, Scott was a college wrestler. He had a lot more wrestling experience than Pete Sell. So I understand what you're saying. I think that for some fighters, it just comes to a point where you have to say, well, look, you know, you might have difficulties getting to the ground, but you got to try. And whether or not Frank Mir, you know, whether or not his stand-up was there to set up a takedown attempt, you know, the fight was stopped so quickly that we didn't even really get to see. But you know that was in the back of his mind, the fact that Brandon Vera has also got some wrestling credentials, and Frank Mir, to my knowledge, doesn't have much, so there must have been some hesitation and reluctance to go for a shot, and, you know, the fight only lasted just over a minute, so.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, every fighter is going to pose a different challenge to you, and I guess that's the whole part of the point of having a good camp is having some guy, you know, someone who can stand outside from an objective perspective and say, these are your strengths and these are your weaknesses and these are your opponent's strengths and weaknesses and this is your best shot to win, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there comes to a point when if people are going out to make it look good and make it look like a good show and they're not, you know, paying attention to actually winning the fight, then I think the legitimacy of the sport suffers to some extent.
There's some other highlight reel moments in that UFC, and in general I thought it was a pretty entertaining card. I thought the James Irvin Hector Ramirez fight was entertaining. You know, talking about leading with your right, he performed that technique very well. Anthony Hardunk with the knockout of Sherman Pendergast, which essentially was set up from that devastating leg kick. And it's funny because I actually downloaded off UFC on demand the Pete Spratt Jeremy Jackson fight, which I, you know, wasn't shown on the pay-per-view or from the Ultimate Fighter finale or fight night a couple weeks ago. But same thing in that fight, Brendan, was Pete Spratt just landed a huge kick to the leg, and Jeremy Jackson said it was his neck that was bothering him later, and he ended up tapping. But, you know, sometimes you see those huge kicks. That one from Hardunk the other night was, you know, one of the hardest kicks to the legs I think I've seen in a while.
I think this is you're seeing a big resurgence here, and again, there's a lot of different things. I think there's MMA is I'm looking for a particular word. It advances dialectically, which means that you know, you've got some strength and your opponent finds some way to counter it, and everyone tries that, and then there's always some way to counter that, right? So it's always moving and it's always innovating itself, and I think one of the ways to win and one of the ways to be good is to stay ahead of the curve. But there are certain techniques that I think are so effective that fighters who can do them inherently well and have a certain amount of expertise will always benefit from those. Leg kicks are one because it's very difficult. If you notice, one of the terrible things about a lot of MMA fighters is that they don't
either they don't have the capacity to, or they don't think it's important to check leg kicks. And I think it's because people have been apprehensive about using a lot of leg kicks because they're scared of getting taken down. But if you have an excellent sprawl, if you're not scared of that, and you can really lean in on your front leg and tee off on someone's leg, that's a devastating kick that you have to check. You can't eat those kicks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen fight after fight in the last couple UFCs and the last couple live shows of fighters literally coming to the third round of the fight and saying, you know, that's it. And as soon as you kick the crap out of that lead leg, you know, your opponent has no offense. You know, they can't throw stiff jabs. They can't, they can't counter. They can't shoot you. And a lot of fighters, and one of the biggest weaknesses, I think, of a lot of guys who are learning stand-up is they don't learn in the traditional way, in the traditional Thai way, for instance, to check leg kicks. They just don't do it. They don't learn it, or they don't do it effectively.
Well,
I think that's one of the things, again, because it's hard to learn how to do, and it takes a long time. And this is where now you see in this last year, you see traditional martial arts really coming to the fore again. You see a lot more traditional techniques that are being used, a lot fancier kicks, and a lot really stuff that's very, very technical stuff that takes a long time to learn.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something that's part of the beauty of mixed martial arts, and I think it far surpasses any of the other combative sports because of that element that you mentioned. It's cyclical. It's always evolving. There's techniques that come into use and then go into disuse because of a new technique that can alter or prevent the former one from being used, and then someone puts a new spin or variation on it. I think with some of these recent leg kicks, I mean, if you look at the George St. Pierre fight, he was using it more regularly, but the hard dunk kick and then the one by Pete Spratt, it's almost as if instead of just doing a sort of, all those kicks are hard, don't get me wrong, but those kicks in particular were really loaded up, you know, like mm-hmm. it was a left cross combination from top and then loading up in a thunderous kick instead of sort of more of a cumulative effects, you know, it's all it takes is that one huge kick. Similarly, too, if you see, you know, Krokop land a kick to the midsection of a fighter,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's got that kind of devastating effect. And,
it literally takes away your heart, you know, and that's, you know, I fear for the time that I would ever have to be in an MMA fight and get kicked in the leg. The one time I did in training was probably the worst pain I've ever had. I felt like crying, so it'd be a great embarrassment.
Well, and I think the one thing, it's not so much that fighters, it does require a great deal of timing and a lot of kickboxing experience to check those kicks regularly, but as well, I think some fighters should say, you know, maybe do this too much or try this too much, is the belief that you can load up on a right cross to the person who's just kicked you in the leg if they drop their hands and put them to the ground. And that is, in all fairness, of the guys who decide to eat the kicks, you do see that sometimes where fighters have a tendency to drop their hands while they're going to, you know, they're throwing a leg kick.
Yeah,
so,
when I say these leg kicks are effective, they're effective also from the perspective in that, you know, if you're going to throw good hard leg kicks, you know, you're coming in, your lead foot's going at a 45-degree angle to get out of the direct path of that response, and you got your hands up, you know, and that takes training and reps and, you know, years. Like, St. Pierre has been a karate guy for years, so it's not surprising that, you know, he can throw those devastating leg kicks but then move very quickly out of the way, and it looks like, you know, he probably could have stood with Hughes for 5 rounds and just chopped him down like that, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that fight then. Let's talk about George St. Pierre versus Matt Hughes. We both picked George St. Pierre to win. You know, I didn't think it was going to be stopped this quickly. And I didn't, I honestly thought it'd be a little bit closer than it was. The way I predicted or thought the fight would unfold was George dominating the stand up as he did. But I thought that Matt might be able to get him down at least once or twice, and have, you know, his little bit of a rally before George St. Pierre would eventually win the fight. And an extremely impressive performance by George St. Pierre. And I know there's a lot of talk right now about a third fight, Brandon. Your thoughts on when this fight should happen, and should it happen?
I picked St. Pierre to win in the first round, and then I kind of got robbed, I think, there at the end. And I did think he was going to actually... I did think he was actually going to walk through Hughes. So I'm not sure, because it wasn't a close fight. It wasn't even... it wasn't even remotely a close fight? And would it be in Hughes' interest? Like, what would be different if there was an immediate rematch? And I can't see it really happening unless Hughes said, this is really, really what I want. You know, I see Hughes, I think he's got one more fight in his contract. I see him being lined up against someone like, I don't know, Caro or Diego, you know, to give him a bit of time to rejuvenate, to make it a better, a better fight, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, they've already announced that George will fight Matt Serra next because of the requirements off the reality show. But is it just me, and you know, I think Matt Hughes, and I've said this on the show, he deserves so much credit. He was an amazing champion. He defended the title many times, shown incredible durability, mental toughness. But I don't know if it's, like I said, if it's just me, but is it just kind of regarded that BJ Penn's injury is you know, not really a valid excuse for what happened, that you know, if he had been conditioned better, that injury perhaps wouldn't have had such an impact on their last fight? Because it just seemed like coming up to this fight against George St. Pierre, and even afterwards, the fight against BJ Penn, it seemed as if by many it was almost an afterthought that Matt Hughes won and he, you know, he easily disposed of BJ Penn or something. And it just seemed like people had forgotten the fact that he had a lot of problems with BJ Penn. The first two rounds, I mean, everyone thought he was on the verge of losing. And then BJ Penn has this injury, which is verified by a doctor. He ends up winning the fight, Matt Hughes. What's your thoughts on that, Brendan? I mean, it just kind of seems like people aren't really remembering the fight against BJ Penn.
Well, I think they remember Hughes winning. I don't think they remember what he looked like in the first couple rounds.
Yeah.
And he looked terrible in the first couple rounds. But Hughes is like that. You know, he's to me, one of the things that you can bet on with Hughes is that he gets better the longer the fight goes. But he's a notoriously slow starter.
Yeah.
And I didn't think he could handle St. Pierre's rhythm, as he calls it, and I think he's far more aggressive and far more devastating striking and far more ways to finish the fight than BJ. But BJ demonstrated that as well, and I don't buy in the whole BJ being unfit thing. You know, the guy looks the way he looks. He's never been ripped, and to say that all of a sudden, you know, he's a monster fighter one card and in bad shape the next. He wasn't in bad shape. He's in great shape.
Well, it just seems like the official account, it's almost as if people are trying to write the official history of that fight as the fact that Matt Hughes ended up winning and BJ Penn. I mean, even some of the comments by, you know, this could have been on account of editing, so I don't want to put mouths in, I don't want to exactly say what George St. Pierre said, but at least in the edited version of an interview I saw, I mean, he referred to BJ Penn not being in shape, that the fight had been changed to fight Matt Hughes, and perhaps he wasn't ready. It just seems like the official account from the UFC, all their commercials, etc., were, you know, I understand hyping a fight, that was clear. They wanted to make the fight between Matt Hughes and George St. Pierre as big as possible. But now, when you look at this new era that's about to be, the UFC's about to embark on, why not try to get BJ Penn back into this picture immediately? And why not have some talk about, yeah, BJ Penn versus Matt Hughes again, rather than just Matt Hughes, George St. Pierre, you know? I just it'll be interesting to see what they do next and who they match Matt Hughes up against next.
Well, didn't Goldberg say in the last I don't know if it was a live show or the last pay per view that BJ was going down to 155, and I don't know. I've never had any verification of that. I never heard it again. I don't know. Not sure what's in the plan. So I don't know why he would have said that.
I didn't hear that. I read an interview, and it was from a Hawaiian paper, I believe. But I read an interview with BJ Penn, who was discussing his injury, and he even made the comment that he wanted to fight Matt Hughes again, that he felt that he was being disrespected, that he wasn't given the credit that he deserves. And he openly discussed, at least in this interview, his dislike for Matt Hughes. So, you know, I think if you look at his, even BJ Penn's performance against George St. Pierre was remarkable as well. So I'd like to see him brought back into the picture, and I think that between the three of them, if the UFC really puts together some solid matchups, then the welterweight division could very much be the future, or at least next year could have some very interesting fights coming up, and let's not exclude Diego Sanchez from that discussion.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think they need to play around with it a little bit more. Like, I'm not a big fan of the immediate matchups or even the immediate plus one matchups. So they've all fought each other once or, and sometimes twice. I think you got to give some of these young guys a shot to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Carl, Diego, both would be great fights.
Yeah.
And Hughes, yeah, I think that's what Hughes needs. He's going to need a couple fights at least to get to come back from this because, I see this as being such a dominant performance on St. Pierre's part. That I'm not sure what would Hughes change in his game.
Last little note I wanted to add, we're getting really, really short on time. Quickly though, Brendan, you pumped up about Mark Hunt's Fedor Emelianenko announcement for the Pride New Year's show?
No, I don't understand what's going on.
And you might want to elaborate for those of us who don't read thoughts.
I don't understand what they're doing. Like this fight can almost be, is almost worthy of criticism, and I think it's almost worthy of criticism on the part of Fedor as well. Why would he take a fight like this? What's the point?
Well, I mean, probably he's thinking, make a good check with relatively easy fight strategy-wise, unless he tries to prove something to the fans or prove something to himself and tries to stand with Mark Hunt, which, Fedor is a great striker. There's no question about it. But when you look at someone with Mark Hunt, he shows the chin that he has. He's fought people like Krokop and done quite well. So did Fedor standing. But
well, the only thing I can figure is that Krokop didn't want the New Year's Eve fight for the title, and so they had to put someone in to take up that slot that wasn't going to inadvertently take the title away from Fedor. Is this even going to be a title fight?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it makes no sense. The only way I can make sense of this fight being made is if Krokop wasn't ready to take the fight.
Well, one thing is certain is, like I mentioned, if Fedor doesn't try to prove something striking wise, if you look at the way Josh Barnett dismantled Mark Hunt, and then you take someone like Fedor, who is, probably much more adept at takedowns than Josh Barnett, and is a great submission artist in his own right. That fight, potentially, if Fedor has it set in his mind to get that fight over and done with and not necessarily put on a big show for the fans, he could potentially win that fight in minutes, barring the fact that maybe Mark Hunt has had some remarkable wrestling experience and really brought up to speed his ground skills.
And it's kind of a crappy position for Fedor to be in because the last fights that he's had, they've almost been up to his discretion in how he would choose to win them, and so what's he supposed to do in this fight? Is he going to be criticized if he finishes in 30 seconds, which is definitely a possibility? I don't see this as being, again, I agree with you. I don't see this as being any different than Barnett, but than Barnett and Hunt, I guess. It's kind of like Fujita for him, If he messes around too much, he's going to get clocked. But, if Hunt clocks him, then he'll probably stay clocked this time. So I can't see him entertaining even remotely standing up with Hunt. There's no rational reason to do it. But, stranger things have happened.
Well, most
kind of disappointing because you realize then in their show in February, he's not going to be ready to fight for February if he fights on January 1st. So
unless he wins in a matter of seconds. But, you know, none of us predicted him to stand with Krokop either, and he seemed fine doing that. But, hopefully maybe he will be slated in for the American card in February, and maybe for that reason alone he'll try to exercise the most prompt way of defeating Mark Hunt, and maybe it will be over in a couple of minutes, who knows. But, I've counted out Mark Hunt in the past before, too, and he's also surprised me in his brief MMA career so far, and he's come a long ways as well. So maybe there'll be more in store for that fight than what we're predicting right now.
Yeah, and who knows? Fedor is a game guy, and he's certainly not. I don't think he's certainly not scared to stand up. Wouldn't be scared to stand up with Hunt. Would it be smart in terms of wanting to win the fight? Definitely not. But like you said, stranger things have happened. Unfortunately, this puts into question. I thought this would be one of the most monumental shockwave cards, but this now puts into question when
you know, when is Fedor going to have a legitimate title challenge? And again, it could be a long while.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. On that note, Brendan, I should get out of here. Let you return to whatever it is you do. And we'll talk to you later in the week, buddy.
I suggest you go look for some water.
Yeah, I'm pretty flush right now with water. I'm okay.
Have you been just laying on your couch drinking Diet Coke?
You know, it's funny because now all of a sudden, you know, I had drank my share of water in the past, but all of a sudden it's always on your mind, you know, and you're like, oh, I really could go for some water right now. It's a very precious commodity, and it could unfortunately be a sign of things to come, but that's probably a different show and a different genre of show altogether. So, Brendan, take care, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Kelsey, have a good week, and try to stay hydrated.